Hey everybody, welcome to the latest episode of the Today New Brunswick, Tomorrow the World show. It's the Dan and Matt show, or the Matt and Dan show, depending on your semantic and or personal preferences. And I'm stoked to be here. This is my AI-generated dive bar in Nova Scotia. That's... I just figure may as well lean into the diviness is sort of my mood this evening, generally speaking. How about you, Dan? How are things in your world? It's been a little while since we've done one of these regular episodes.
Yeah, things are going pretty well. It's interesting. Halifax has a boil water advisory at the moment, which, you know, is always exciting in the summertime.
That blows. That seriously blows. I didn't know that at all, man. I'm sorry to hear that. It sucks.
No, I guess it was just something with one of the treatment plants, but still, you know, it was an excuse to not have to be at the office today. You know, like that sort of thing.
Pennies for heaven, man. You take them
exactly.
When you can,
so. A little more time out on the deck. As I sound like just like the most suburban dude in the world, but anyways, no, things are okay all in all, you know, given like weird circumstances and whatnot. But yeah, how are things down in your end of the world, Matt?
Yeah, well, it's good. I'm sort of creaking towards maybe having a job pretty soon. Nothing I can say about it yet, but it's down to references at this point, so you know, fingers and toes and nostrils and scrotum crossed, you know, as far as that goes. But man, I'll tell you what, though. I will tell you what, Dan, as a benefit to the listening audience, as opposed to just our sort of long maritime hello, which is just kind of it's part of who we are, and it's a legitimate part of who we are. But I am seriously stoked because just this very day, Dan, you know this, but the listening audience doesn't yet. I had a chance to talk with Colin, the drummer from Sam I Am.
Oh, yeah. That's exciting. That's very
just,
exciting.
The nicest friggin' guy in the world. I just literally approached him through his Instagram, and he got back to me not even after that long. He just replied to one of my kind of semi-annoying, I don't know if it was like a Garfield message, that I hose people with just like what I consider awesome content, but I have had like one legitimate published writer who I'm going to probably talk to for this show just get back to me like, man, stop sending me this shit. like fair enough, friend. You know, fair enough. We switched it to email. It's all good. The integrity of the thing remains, but so like Dan, you know, or whoever, if anytime you get one of those kind of weirdish kind of Instagram thingies, there's a chance I'm also sending it to Jack White or Pearl Jam or whoever, just because they have the ability to block me. So as long as they're not blocking me, I just figure you're in the parking lot of the All Ages show, don't be a bitch, you know. So anyway, bro, that's kind of my wavelength right now. It was really, seriously, a radical conversation with Colin, and I seriously recommend anybody checking it out in our conversation series. It's hype. The guy is so fucking nice, and he's so creative, and he's got so many projects over the years and decades besides Sam I Am. And he's a visual artist, too, and he's a middle-aged dad. And the interview takes place in like his little middle-aged dad creative studio with his drums in Brooklyn. So it was just it was charming as hell, man. So you know,
that's great.
That kind of puts us onto the topic at hand, because you had a family swoop through significantly not that long ago, right? We talked about this on the interview with Matt Gay, and
yes,
that was sort of the impetus, as I recall, from the episode that we're talking about now, right? The it's the Family Axe episode here.
Yeah, wow. It's just musical. It's, I guess, I realized I had given the broad topic of musical, you know, sort of like musical family acts, and I just picked five sets of siblings. But still, yeah, like I said, just families and the ideas of families and stuff was kind of on my brain at the time. You know, I'm not some, like, most of my immediate family lives like on the opposite side of the country, so I don't always see everybody that often. And, you know, I kind of jumped back in with both feet a couple weekends ago and went to a family reunion in Fredericton.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anyways, like I said, just sort of family in general on the brain. So I was thinking, like, hey, what about musical family acts? And I realized, and looking at this list, that three pretty influential artists on me, when, you know, sort of in my younger years especially, were all sort of prominently featured siblings. So, yeah. Anyways, that was my topic. That's what I figured would be, you know, a good topic for the show this week.
Well, that's a great idea for a topic. And speaking to which, I'm really impressed, Dan, because, you know, even though this episode has been kind of long gestating for personal circumstances, it's like it's pregnant in the, it's like we took the podcast and in the parking lot of the junior high school and it got pregnant and now the episode is ready to go. Good Lord, bro. I'm sorry. Dark places. Camtasia, folks, or not. But no, man, one of the things about it, though, for real, is that, first of all, I was curious who, you know, we might overlap with because similar tastes and whatnot. Man, this is just something where the more I started looking at it, I almost feel like, goddamn, we could so easily do a two-parter on this alone.
Oh, right? Easily, like, yeah. System. Like,
so I didn't quite even, like, I made my list. And, so as a matter of process, folks, to get back to my very classy pregnancy metaphor, Dan has shifted me over his notes for this episode. So I predict that tonight, with maybe one more caffeinated beverage in me, we'll actually get this one out at the same time. So two of the music show episodes, you know, in one 12-hour stretch. It's something I'm looking forward to as a producer of content, Dan. This is good shit right here.
Getting your content out.
You're goddamn right. That's what the hell it is. I hope people are, like, appreciating the fact that we're not cluttering up our thing with, like, you know, we are obliged to tell you about our Patreon, and here's a, you know, there's just like there's this preamble. You know, I listen to some of these podcasts, the early just thing, and it's like they got a 5-minute sort of, here's all the ways that you have a place that you can click on a widget to pay us a marginal amount of money. And it's like, that's a great idea. I sure would like to be doing nothing else but this for my living, or a fraction of it. But at the same time, I'm just like, yeah, but that kind of clutters up the whole deal. We're still amenable to taking money from you if you want to send it to us, I guess is what I'm trying to say there. Dan, who's the first group on your list? I'm really curious, bro.
Well, I figured might as well just go chronologically and, you know, just I feel like I'm coming in hot with this, but one of my favorite bands to feature sort of like family members has got to be Victoria BC's No Means No, featuring brothers Rob and John Wright. Yeah.
100%. And I mean, couldn't agree with you more, bro.
And like, I was thinking about it and how, you know, when you're younger, I feel like a lot of people, they'll pick an artist that's sort of like, that's like their starting point that they're going to try and build their budding little personality around. And you get a lot of people where it's like the Misfits. Or, you know, they're like really into Minor Threat, or they're really into, you know, Led Zeppelin or something like that. And like No Means No were kind of that band for me when I was younger.
Awesome.
And a big part of it was the fact that all their songs are kind of built around the bass. You know, like Rob Wright's bass playing is kind of like the central feature, and it's not like super flashy all the time, but it is, you know, that's what everything kind of weaves in and out of. And I played bass. I wasn't good at it, but I appreciated the fact that it's like, hey, you can do that with the instrument.
You played bass badly in at least the bands that I really dug in Fredericton, man. Like, but, I don't care. Sort of like, if you're stepping up to the plate in the friggin' all-ages scene as a teenager or an early adult, You deserve all the credit you get playing like as if you need to be good, like, to play bass in a punk band. As if,
yeah.
Right?
But like, and I mean, that's kind of the great thing about punk rock, is you don't have to be good at it necessarily. And, you know, the Wright brothers, they're kind of the vintage where, like, they got inspired to play music because they bought that first Ramones record. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they already had other influences outside the genre and, you know, are quite, you know, they're very, like, technically skilled for, like, you know, a band in the quote unquote scene.
Very much so.
And, I got
a question. You saw them at Farmer's Market, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, Mike, what they did was that they had two drummers out for that.
Yes, they did, because they had the
that show blow my mind. High point of the scene, equally as much as Fugazi, in my opinion, in Fredericton, and the two drummers thing. I was like, what the fuck? I mean, I just remember my eyes kind of popping out of my head a little bit for that, bro.
Yeah, they did. For a while there, when they were doing tours where they would play mostly, it was like 2/3 No Means No and then a 1/3 Hanson Brothers. It was the drummer from the Hanson Brothers would just play along for the No Means No songs. And just, you know, the fact that, like, they would have their drummer front and center because he also sang, kind of thing. Like, I always thought it was really cool. And yeah, it started as just the two brothers. Eventually they would have, like, different guitar players in the band over the course of the years, and sometimes like a second percussionist. But it was always just the two of them. Like, they started out, like, 1978, I think, is when they released their first album, 78 or 79. I know there was, like, an original pressing of it going around from, like, friends who, like, a friend of mine who owns, like, a used record store in Victoria, like, got an original pressing of the first No Means No album. And it was just, like, the kind of thing that it was, like, everyone's, like, holy grail, like, oh my God, when would we get it? You know, like, really just seeing people panicking over it. And, like, it's like, even just, you know, the last time I was in a record store, they came up in conversation with, you know, with the clerk, just because, somebody in there was talking about them. And they're very, you know, a band that, like, I don't know. Like, there's just no other bands like No Means No that sound like that. Like, that mix of just, like, you know, a little bit of jazz, a little bit of Joy Division, a little bit of Johnny Cash, a little bit of just, like, sheer just anger. But, like, just, I don't know. Like, it just puts chills down my spine thinking of some of their music sometimes. And just, like, you know, I had to include them on my list. Like, they're just one of my absolute favorite bands. I got to see them a couple times. Well, I saw them once as, at that show in Fredericton. And then I also saw them do just, like, a Hanson Brothers set here in Halifax, actually. And as well, I got to see Rob Wright play solo once. And he was just wearing, like, a priest outfit, playing bass and singing, like, with, like, no other instruments. And it was just so intense, because it was, like, this really, you know, like, the whole room was entirely still, except for him on stage. Yeah, exactly.
I need you now.
Just, like, playing bass, wearing, like, a priest outfit.
That would have been intense.
And, it was really cool. Like I said, it's just, they were that band for me. When I was younger, and, like, you know, I caught them sort of in this sec, like, because they started out in 1978 and they went until I think like 89 or 90. They took a little bit of a break, and then it was that Why Do They Call Me Mr. Happy album that they were touring on, you know, when we saw them back in the day or whatever. That was kind of their big comeback. They had a whole other run after that, which is really cool that they're able to keep it going. And I know Rob Wright, I don't think he's playing music anymore, but John Wright has a new band. I can't remember the name
Dead
of
Bob.
It, but it's, yeah, it's Dead Bob. And it's like,
Bob, and they put out a release earlier this year. It went pretty unnoticed, but we noticed it and we talked, and I mentioned it in my show notes when it came out. It's good. I mean, it's friggin' legit. Mm-hmm. And thank you for that, Dan. I mean, this is one of those things where, like, I knew for sure we would both have No Means No on the list. So I'm not even going to add much to it, except to say that for me, I wasn't like a deep fan with them, but it was just more like they're between the live performance, which just completely, it's one of those gigs that just changed how I experienced music on the scene at the time. You know, it's like I stage dove or whatever, you know, went to school the next day just feeling like fucked up for being in the pit. It was one of those, right? And so, you know, besides that visceral kind of experience, the records, just the wrong is the one for me. That's just like start to finish, just pummeling rage, white hot, incandescent, goddamn nerd rage with like, yeah, jazz. And as you say, all this other stuff going into it. I'll just add, I guess, by way of further context to what Dan has already said, that Alternative Tentacles is getting into the No Means No reissue business. Mm. They started out by putting out a reissue of the Dad 7-inch not that long ago. And, you know, they supported it with a T-shirt and, you know, some promotion. And now, speaking to which, Wrong has been reissued. It kind of got delayed a little bit, but it's out now. I actually have that waiting for me as trading item that I'm going to pick up at Backstreet Records here in St. John tomorrow or Thursday. And I'm really looking forward to that. So, I mean, I'm just really glad that even though they're never going to get the respect or recognition that they deserve, it's like one of those things. I actually read a clip where, you know, Dave Grohl says that, you know, the second heaviest live band that he ever experienced besides Bad Brains was No Means No. And it's like, that's legit. I mean, I don't, you know, whatever he saw them and whatever that was. And like dudes like Alkaline Trio, The Lord's Arms, the Chicago punk guys of the vintage, you know, this vintage sort of do shout them out from time to time. You know, they played a cover, you know, on, you know, like, anyway. So, like, it's one of those things. It's like, if you know who the Velvet Underground are, then fucking A. It's one of those things. If you know who No Means No is, fucking A. Most people don't. Most people won't. And I guess probably that's the world we live in. We all deserve better, but fuck, No Means No forever, bro. I guess I'll pass it back over to you, man, because I sort of extemporized enough. We did a double item on that one, bro. So yeah. Why don't you give me your number two?
My number two, I figure I might as well go for another one that was, you know, a big influence on me when I was younger, especially, and that's The Breeders. Featuring
awesome.
Yeah, featuring Kim and Kelly Deal. Though originally, it wasn't a family act. They were kind of more of a soup for their first album Pod, it was Tana Donnelly who played in Belly, or another indie rock band at the time. And I didn't realize this because he used a pseudonym. I can't remember what he called him. I think it was like Mike something. But Britt Walford, the drummer from Slint, played on the first album as well. Yeah,
and just to add, Dan, because Breeders are on my list of honorable mentions. So I'll throw this in, and then I'll pass the mic back to you. Recorded by Steve Albini, and they did like other stuff too with Steve Albini. I think, you know, you can Google pictures of Steve Albini and like Kim and Kelly sitting on a stage at like a fucking TED talk or something, like just, you know, looking nerdy and fun. So all the stuff about like Steve Albini, like misogyny and shit, it's like, yeah. Some shit came up. He was a fucking edgelord. But then he hung out with the Breeders. He was friends with Kim and Kelly, you know, legit. So anyway, bro, I'm going to let you talk. And okay. thanks for bringing these to the front of the list, bro.
But yeah, their second album, Last Splash, was one of those, like, it was just one of those albums that was kind of everywhere. And that was the one where Kelly Deal came on and, you know, became more of like a family act. And like, I had already known, like, the Pixies were one of the first quote unquote alternative bands that I remember hearing about. Because when I was like a real young dork, I would just buy any music magazine, even if I didn't know anything about, like, I was just like, it's a music magazine. You know, I'm sure there's something cool in here that I'll find out about, even though I didn't know about most of it and I didn't care about a lot of it. Cause, you know, at the time it was, you know, maybe like, it was probably, this probably would have been like the late 80s or something when I started doing that. And it, you know, when I was really young. And, yeah, I just remember the first time I heard like an alternative or indie band mentioned, it was like a review of the Pixies' Tromp Le Monde. in like some British magazine I picked up or something. That like, I know that sounds pretentious, but it was literally just like, yeah, I might as well just picked up like some rags.
Uncut magazine or whatever.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Or but like, you know, the one they gave away at A&A Records, like that level of stuff. But it just like, it had a Pixies view and I was like, oh, what's this? And, you know, Kim Deal was a huge part of that band. And like, you know, I was glad that when I got to see them on the reunion tours, it was when she was also part of it. But anyways,
awesome.
Yeah, like I said, Last Splash was, you know, a huge splash for the band after Kelly joined. And like, yeah, Cannonball, I think, was one of the first songs I remember trying to learn by ear on bass. Just had that very distinctive riff at the beginning.
Danceable shit in the world, man.
Oh, for sure. And yeah, they're just like one of the like signature bands of that era for sure.
Very much.
And it did kind of take a little toll on the band though, because they took a break so like both Deal sisters could kind of do their rounds in rehab. Then yeah, got back together in the late 90s. Put out I think their first album after Last Splash came out in like 2002. It's called Title TK. And, you know, they put out a couple other bands with, you know, it was just like Kim and Kelly and whoever else. And then they got the Last Splash lineup to get back together in 2013 to do like a big 20th anniversary tour. And that's kind of, I think, what's been going around mostly now. And they actually kind of popped up in like pop culture recently, which I thought was kind of cool. In that, I don't know if you're familiar with the pop singer Olivia Rodrigo.
I was going to mention this if you didn't, so I'm glad you are. Please continue, sir.
Yes. Anyways, she, you know, it's like she's pretty much gives off big like weaponized theater kid energy, but in kind of an endearing way if you're into that sort of stuff. But like, yeah, she's a big fan of like alternative rock of a certain era. And like requested that the Breeders open up for her at like Madison Square Garden at this huge friggin' concert, like one of like this, you know, one of the artists that like Taylor Swift rearranges things to like knock off the charts, you know, like is at that level of popularity. And yeah, it was just like, hey, cool, weird indie band from the 90s, you know, like alt rock band from the 90s, like, will you please get back together and open my show for like, you know, the children of people that listen to you, I'm sure. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. Anyways, yeah, it probably is at that point. But yeah, it's just cool to see, like, yeah, the reaching out like that from somebody sort of in that world to a band like the Breeders.
I remember thinking at the time, that's nice of this young woman to do for them. And also, I mean, things like, I mean, they open for Foo Fighters at some shows.
Yeah.
You know, not that long even apart from that. So It just seems like they're finally, you know, maybe it's the rehab, maybe who knows what, but it sort of seems like they've got enough of their act together to be able to kind of manage the level of success they have and sort of kind of roll out with it the way that the Pixies have been carrying on without him for, you know, since like what they got back together 10 years ago or something at least.
Oh, it's more, well, much more than that. Cause it was, I think
15 years. I mean, 2008 or something like that is when they first started like playing together again. I mean, whatever the case it's been a hell of a long time. So It's just nice that, you know, Kelly, or Kim rather mixed them up even with their names. That must be weird being in a band with your twin. I wish them all the best success because they're just freaking awesome and they should be more popular than they are for sure. Really.
All right.
Yeah, man.
What's your next pick, Matt?
Okay. Well, this is a band that I don't think I've talked about them on the show yet, but I actually really like them a lot. So I'm glad that I finally have a chance to throw them in. I really dig The National, man. I really dig The National a lot. I would say between, you know, their records, The Boxer, or just Boxer, no, there's no guy, I suppose. Boxer, and then High Violet, and then Trouble Will Find Me, I would say are like as great a three-run record of indie pop like legitimate whip, like as good as anything else you could possibly find, you know, of that sort of late, mid to late aughts kind of era, you know, because it's kind of like, you're talking about like, you know, they came from like the same scene as like the Strokes and Interpol and shit like that, right? Which, I mean, I'm not going to disparage anybody, you know, for doing anything, but I'm just, I've never been interested in that stuff even a bit. I mean, Interpol kind of, but like, you know, the whole like New York, like aughts, like whatever, it's just like, fuck off and die. It just seemed to me so outlandish and pretentious. So now you get this band who sort of came through all that, and they just have this, it's they're this weird, you know, bunch of Ohio transplants. Okay, the drummer and the bass player are brothers. And then you got the two guitarists, excuse me, who are twins. And then you got Matt, the singer, who's just this weird, you know, borderline drunk guy, it looks like. And he actually has a brother, too. And they made a film. His brother is like this filmmaker of sorts. And they made a film, Mistaken for Strangers. And it was the most Spinal Tap shit in the world about how Matt Berninger's brother basically gets himself fired as being a roadie on their tour. And then right while they're starting to break and get popular with High Violet, and he makes a movie about it, and then his like subsequent reconciliation with his brother and all this. It's goddamn, it's weird and it's funny, and it's a Spinal Tap indie rock version of anything you could hope to see. I'm, again, you look at like any band's output, you go, there's some certain stuff I can just, you know, really gravitate towards and dig. So if you say, okay, here's these other records since Trouble Will Find Me, they put out three or four of them now. And the last couple, like, I mean, the second page of Frankenstein or the first page of Frankenstein, whatever it is, I think they even put out a sequel to that. It's just been getting kind of cold to middling reviews. Which is whatever. I just think for those three records that I mentioned, along with Alligator too, if you want to be generous and throw that in, I think it's just such, they got so much going on when they were firing on all cylinders. And to my mind, probably they still have a bunch of good songs, you know, together. Yeah, man, I'm just really pleased that with this topic, I was able to talk finally about the National, because I really have enjoyed them a lot over the years. So back to you, my friend.
All right. So for my next, I guess the next ones I'll mention, I'll kind of, I guess, keep it in the same kind of like rootsy indie vein, sort of, because I have a couple of artists who started out in a band together and have since kind of branched off on their own separate projects, but still kind of collaborate every once in a while. And that's, Katie and Allison Crutchfield, formerly of the Arkansas pop punk band P.S. Eliot, and currently of Katie's solo project Waxahachie, and Allison's band Swearin' Fam, who I don't know if any of that all rings a bell to you?
Not even a bit, but I am supportive of where you're going with it, Brent.
Okay. Just because, you know, like Katie Crutchfield, a.k.a. Waxahachie, is like, she's kind of having a little starting to cross over. Like I said in my notes, she's starting to hit that, like, you know, musical guest on the late night talk shows level of fame.
Coming,
you know,
soon,
after
Seth Meyers.
Yes, exactly. You know, her album that came out this year, Tiger's Blood, which is her sixth album as Waxahachie, is kind of getting a lot of notice. It's cool. Yeah, it's that kind of like, you know, that like the National or like Big Thief or like that kind of just like, you know, chill, rootsy kind of, you know, indie-ish type of music. And, you know, she's one of the best doing it. Like I said, she's on her sixth album now. First album. Yeah. And like I said, got her start in playing in a pop punk band called P.S. Eliot in Arkansas with her sister, Allison Crutchfield. P.S. Eliot put out a couple albums in like the late aughts, early, yeah, I think they broke up in like 2011 or something, just generally getting tired of like that end of like the pop punk scene, which can, you know, which at the time was maybe not the most fun place to be, you know, as a woman.
Pop punk's a misogyny. Imagine.
Exactly.
I'm shocked, I'm telling you.
There's the, I hate to say it, but I keep thinking there's a meme that I've seen shared a bunch amongst people I know that's, it just says, defend pop punk. What am I, a sex crimes lawyer? But anyways.
Bazinga! It's funny because it's legit. It's not wrong.
Anyways, to get back to music though, like I said, even though they started a band together, they've sort of had parallel solo careers since. And Alison Krutch, and well, Waxahachie is probably the more popular band. Alison Crutchfield band Swearin, who are based out of Philadelphia, are also definitely worth checking out. They put out a self-titled album in 2012 and another album called, like, their second album, Serpent Strange, in 2013. It's just that kind of like, they're more kind of like, you know, a mix of like where indie meets the kind of jangly pop punk type stuff.
It already, even though I've never heard it. I get it.
Yeah. It's funny. They came here to Halifax touring not long after Serpent Strange came out, and they played at like this place called Plan B that was like, rest in peace to like, you know, a great venue that at the same time was just a really fucking weird room to be in. Cause it was like a bunch of like tiny little mini vintage stores where people were selling everything from like video games to taxidermy. And then people had various like workshops in the basement where they would, you know, make taxidermy or work on their noise band or like whatever. And you just like turn around and it's like, oh, there's a coffin. Oh, there's a three-headed deer head for some goddamn reason. Like it was just that kind of place. And they played in the back room and it was a scenario I could only describe. I don't know. It was kind of a rough time, but. But the best I could describe it is like a Christmas carol of failed relationships, just all in the background of, you know, the back of the room with this like pop punk show. They're a great live band. I even got to see them again. After Serpent Strange came out, they took a break for, there were some interpersonal issues between some of the members of the band, I think. So they reformed with a new lineup a few years later, put out one more album, toured a bunch. I got to see them in Toronto at the Horseshoe.
Tirana.
When I was up there, I was taking a break from going to see a bunch of indie wrestling shows to like, you know, see some music for once. And Swearin just happened to be in town. And it was, yeah, they put on a killer show once again. Their album from 2018 is called Fall Into the Sun. But I just thought it was cool that, like, you know, these two sort of I will say about Swearin, one of the last times I tried to sort of get caught up on like what was going on in music was probably around like 2012, 2013, where it was more like, you know, learning about stuff through early Instagram and like as scary as it is to think about it, like Tumblr blogs, and like, you know, people post
yourself. You're not
definitely
that way, bro. That's
no, and it was, but like, you know, that was just sort of, that was the era of the internet that was, and you know, there were a few like distros and stuff that I would follow on there, and like Swearin were one of the big bands that I remember like sort of being popular at the time. So it was like, I just thought it was cool that, you know, they had these two artists that are like sort of very well respected and skilled in their respective subgenres that just happen to be sisters, you know.
No,
and like,
sure,
had played in another band together. So and yeah, like I said, like Waxahachie's having a bit of a moment. What's the name of, yeah, the, her song Right Back to It, that's the one that I put the, that's, I was corny and I put like the, you know, the song that's like her hit, kind of the closest to the hit at the moment from the new album.
The emphasis track,
it's a collaboration with a dude named MJ Lenderman, who plays in a band called Wednesday my partner really likes them. I've heard her play the Wednesday album a bunch, and then finding out that, you know, him and Waxahachie are have a pretty popular song now. I thought that was cool. But anyways,
nice.
Yeah, like I said, Waxahachie and Swearin', you know, more musical siblings that I wanted to put on my list. So anyways, what's your next pick, Matt?
Yeah, cool beans. Well, I guess just sort of as we get into, the last 30% or whatever of the show, I'll do a twofer, as you just did, sir. And the first is a band who I've talked a lot about on the show, so it's going to be more just of a perfunctory noting that there are siblings in that band. And then the other is another band who I really like a lot for very specific albums. But again, like the National, I just haven't necessarily brought them up on the show. So the first band is I'm giving notice to the Replacements, of course, Tommy and Bob Stinson, brothers. And that is the reason that that band even existed in the first place. Without them being siblings, and without the utterly, you know, sort of dysfunctional, borderline kind of white trash, South Minneapolis kind of milieu, you know, it wouldn't have happened. It really took those two dudes being in a family together, step siblings, right? Actually, as a matter of fact. And Bob Mayer, who was a guest on the show, the other podcast, who wrote the biography of the Replacements, he does a really harsh and it's the early stuff about the Stinsons is just, I mean, it was a fan. There was abuse in the family, just really some dysfunctional stuff. And, you know, in retrospect now, you know, it's because with Bob Mayer reporting about it, you know, through his books and interviewing and stuff, you know, even people who were around at the time, like contemporaries at the time, didn't quite know fully about it. Right. And now it's just like, yeah, Bob is a legit tragic dude, you know, but he burned brightly and he fucking left an amazing musical legacy with everything he did with the Replacements, all the Twin Tone records, and then Tim, their major label, for the one record he was on for that. And then he's been factored significantly into just the subsequent reissues, the really awesome set of enhanced reissues that, again, Bob Mayer told me during our discussion last week or whenever it was, there's at least two more of those sets probably coming out relatively within the next few years. So I got to assume at least one of those is going to be Bob Stinson era. So, I mean, so that's one of them. I'll just kind of leave it at that because God knows I can talk the Replacements for much longer. The other band I want to give a shout out to for this is Jesus and Mary Chain. And I just love them so much. Jim and William Reed. And then, you know, whoever they got playing drums or, additional keyboards or whatever at the time, with them is it Aberdeen, Scotland for them or Glasgow or. Anyway, you can Google it, folks.
Scotland.
Yeah, they're goddamn Scotland. I have Scottish ancestry, so I can just say. Anyhow, I didn't really. I know people heap lots of respect and love on their first record, Psycho Candy, and it's good. It's a good shoegaze record for me. But their second record, Darklands, which people don't seem to care about, fucking is phenomenal. It's just the most trippy, sad, downcast, but utterly listenable, northern UK kind of fucking gloom that you could want. And, I don't know how close they got to real commercial success, But man, that record is just such an awesome record for me. And another one that they put out, their other stuff besides these ones is all kind of legit. But then the other record that I like, probably equally to Darklands, maybe not quite as much, but still pretty high up there, Stoned and Dethroned, which was recorded for Rick Rubin's American record label, as I understand. They released it anyway. And, you know, again, it's sort of like, I sort of liken it in my mind to like the Joshua Tree, except on really shitty drugs. Like, it's just like the exploration of America, you know, with their, you know, the way they sort of bring in all these influences and songs about travel and, you know, seeing new shit and whatever. But it's just like, you know, utterly poppy and just like so many bad drugs kind of in the background and so many bad relationships informing it. And it's goddamn brilliant for my money. They kind of broken up and gotten back together now. They have new recordings on the way, as I understand. So they're still somewhat of a going concern. So, yeah, that's my two sibling acts that I'm going to shoehorn into one there, Dan. So how about you, man? What do you got for your next one?
All right. I might as well just sort of, you know, wrap the rest of mine up here now, too.
Sure.
I guess the last one that I'll talk about on the show here is one. It's, I guess, bands that I have mentioned before, but I'll mention them again. I wanted to mention the Burdett brothers, Todd and Paul Burdett, from the bands Whose Hero Is Gone and Tragedy, who, you know, like, yeah, His Hero Is Gone were just, they were a band that they definitely had a moment. I know Tragedy are the, I guess, sort of the band of theirs was probably the more popular and what had sort of like a longer run later on, which, like, sort of more into the aughts. But like those three His Hero Is Gone albums are just like, they're just classics of a certain kind of just like really fucking heavy music. You know what I mean? It's like a mix of like punk and black metal and doom metal and just like the sound of the end of the world. I remember when I bought their first album, 13 Counts of Arson, I didn't know it was a 45 RPM 12 inch. And I was playing it on 33 instead of 45. And it was just too, I was like, it just sounded like, it's like, this might be too heavy for me. What the hell is this? And then I noticed the label going around and I switched up to the right speed. And it was still heavy and fast and like angry. And the drum still sounded like, you know, it was just like, you know, they're made of like hollowed out mountains or something. And but like, you know, it was still sort of like reasonable human music sounds and not what was coming out at the wrong speed. And it just like, you know, like there was a time in my life when I was a young dirtbag where I basically wore one of their shirts until it rotted off my body. You know, like they were one of my favorite bands. I mentioned them before, like when I talked about their guitar player, Yannick Lorraine,
yes,
and some of his other projects as well. But yeah, one of the central driving forces of the band is brothers Todd and Paul Burdett. And it's funny, I don't know, I always thought it was funny that Todd is like tall and always seemed kind of like cranky and standoffish, and Paul was short and seemed like the way more friendly of the two. But you know, they were like, you know, the two of them came together to make just all this great music. They had a side project for a little while where they switched places and Paul got to sing and Todd played drums, called Death Threat. But it was Death Threat, that was one word, DEATHERAT, or REAT, as opposed to Death Threat, two words, which was another band going at the same time. That was a side project of a different popular hardcore band. You know, in a classic scapegoats with an S, scapegoats with a Z scenario. But anyways, yeah, it's just like these guys, they just made some of my favorite music, you know, from like the, you know, like the late 90s all through the aughts, like between His Hero Is Gone and Tragedy. And so, yeah, like I just had to, I figured I had to throw them on the list. And I guess my other picks I'll mention really quickly as well, that I want to at least include in the notes, because there are some newer younger guys that are doing a bunch, and that is Colin and Taylor Young. Okay. Who I guess they're mostly known for the band Twitching Tongues, who are kind of like, it's like dudes from the hardcore scene playing kind of like dark alternative metal, I guess you could say.
Cool.
And They also play in God's Hate, who I've mentioned on the show before, because their singer is the pro wrestler Brody King. They were on my list for our wrestling episode, for the episode where I talk about wrestling stuff. But they play in that band as well. And also, you know, just like a bunch of other projects. Like, they're, you know, there's always those guys in the scene that just have, you know, if they've got 10 minutes and two friends, they've got another band. You know, right. They definitely give off that kind of vibe. And on top of that, like, Taylor Young is, like, he's a producer and recording engineer for a lot of, like, you know, like, he recorded the MS Paint album. He records, like, Incendiary and, like, all these other kind of, like, bigger, like, hardcore kind of bands. Like, he produces a lot of their albums. And Colin Young is, does one of the sort of the podcasts of record. In like that end of like the hardcore scene, the show Hard Lore, which is like a pretty entertaining. It's like basically it's like, what if you got a bunch of golden people that were actually golden retrievers, like that kind of vibe. But you know, talking with like members of like, you know, like various like popular kind of like more like they're really into like Marauder and like that end of like, you know, kind of medley hardcore scene. And like, but yeah, it's like they're just like a couple, like Colin and Taylor Young are just like a couple guys that are involved in like a lot of different projects right now currently that I like, and yeah, just have their hands in a lot of things, like the recording and the podcasting, and like they'll just kind of like pop up everywhere. Like Colin's doing wrestling themes for a while, and he was part of a lot of the 2 Minutes to Late Night bedroom cover videos as well, like,
which are awesome.
Yes, those are definitely, check those out if you've not seen those. Those are
awesome. Like, no matter what you like as a punk music fan, there's something within those videos that you're just gonna go, that is goddamn rad. For sure.
Yeah, they did 2 Minutes to Late Night actually did like a live show in Toronto recently,
and I saw the part of that, That would have been sick as hell.
Yeah, it was the same festival that, like, Orchid did a reunion show at. Right. So, yeah, like, yeah, I can't remember. It was, like, something, The Ground. Anyways, but, yeah, so my last picks, just to get back on track, Colin and Taylor Young, and also the Burdette Brothers from His Hero Is Gone and Tragedy, etc. There's plenty of honorable mentions. I mean, I kept mine pretty, like, punk and indie-centric. Like, I didn't even get into, you know, your various, like, you know, Cohen Wainwright dynasties, etc. Or like, you know, just, yeah, even like other bands I could think of off the top of my, you know, there's so many, we could easily do another part two, like you said, but you know, that's my list for now. Well, so I guess we'll cut it off here.
You're the director and de facto supervisor of topics, my pal, so you might want to punch that into
we'll put that on the list somewhere.
Excel sheet or whatever it is you even use, because I don't even know what your process is, bro.
Excel sheet.
Dog over at the other podcast has given me a link to an Excel sheet, which I refuse to look at. I'm just like,
actually,
my liability here, bro. It's not mine to contend with. You know, I take as much responsibility for the interviews as I can, because people will, like, if they say yes to me, then great. But beyond anything else in terms of themes or topics, I'm like, boom, that is the responsibility. I'm out of that particular creative loop, and I'm glad to be broke. So,
yeah,
come on.
I just wanted to say, though, on the topic of those interviews, like, I think they've, I think you've been doing a pretty good job with them, and I've really enjoyed the ones I've been, you know, the ones I've been checking out. Like, it's been really it's been a really great addition to the general podcasting family here.
Well, and as I say, what I'm hoping, Dan, is that you you know, will jump in, and you know, you mentioned that you kind of maybe have one or two things potentially scoped out, a subject in your sights, you know, to possibly reach out to. Matt Gay of Fuckhawk fame. Have you heard, people? It's the summer of Fuckhawk. If you don't know this, you don't follow me on Instagram, because I've been putting the Fuckhawk 2 street fucking slide on basically everything I put up. Like, even just pictures of St. John when I'm like out for my walk. Like, yeah, and here's some potted flowers, and here's a fucking bone, and here's Fuck Hawk 2, street fucking. Like, and it's just, my thing now with it is like when I see something like I don't want to see in my feed, like something stupid about fucking Post Malone going country or some bullshit, I just like, I'm not disrespecting you, Post Malone, but come on, you're doing it because Beyonce did it, motherfucker. And so anyway, I'm just like, I leave a link to the Bandcamp on the article. Fuck Hawk 2, street fucking got Bandcamp, you know? And so people have been clicking on it, like, you know, it doesn't get removed necessarily. It's up there for at least a little bit before it gets flagged. So I am all in, and I'm hoping I can get Matt Gay to conduct some interviews, because I think it would be fucking more hilarious than the goddamn Daily Show if Matt Gay were like an active correspondent for this thing somehow. Putting it to you, Matt, we love you. You're fucking on the 506 Consulting. You are principal consultant for Upper Canada. We don't take that shit lightly. You're getting no salary and you're getting no benefits, and we expect you to devote large amounts of time to an unpaid creative endeavor above and beyond what you already do. So be making with content, Matt Gay. He's not even going to watch this, so I don't know why I'm saying it. But yeah, man, the very last ones that I'll just really quickly throw out, just bullet point, because then I can expand on them in the notes. I just wanted to give a shout out to the Cowboy Junkies, wherein at least three members of that band are brother and sister and brother and whatever. And we talked about them on a previous show, a female fronted bands, where I brought up Cowboy Junkies. I just love them so much. I mean, you can just throw on any of their records and I would enjoy it immediately, unqualified. It takes me to a dreamlike space. A lot of that is Margot Timmons' voice, because it's unparalleled and underrated, and as a female vocalist, she doesn't get, I don't think, anywhere near the popular credit she deserves, certainly not in Canada. And, you know, the rest of the family, it's just, they've been playing together since they were kids, you can tell. I mean, there's just, the chemistry is there. And that's one of the cool things, I think, that makes, you know, these family-centered bands so rad. So Cowboy Junkies, another band that I mentioned before, Death, from Michigan, you know, from Detroit, as a matter of fact, who kind of had a bit of a moment, as we say, when they're, you know, basically got some people from the early millennial cohort or late Gen X cohort kind of discovered some of these recordings, got them into circulation, and now these dudes are still out there playing select dates. I don't know about recording music, but they have an amazing EP, you know, that was recorded contemporarily when they, you know, were together. And the very last band I'm going to throw out here without mentioning the notes is The Missing from Fredericton, who have, you know, skate punk. I'm going to call it skate punk. There's no shame in that. It's not meant pejoratively at all. It was skate punk. And my best friend, John, my best friend in the world that I've known since I was 5 years old, and we're still really tight, John Bowie. Sorry for the drunken, you know, phone calls and text messages and shit, bro. You're my best friend and I love you. And he was in that band Missing. They kind of had a lineup that kind of changed over the years of their being together. But his John's awesome brother, his real brother, not me, his real biological brother, Matt Bowie, is also in that band, or was. And the brothers Bowie have continued to collaborate. They've got a few new things in the work, which they've shared with me, but I'm not allowed to talk about, but they shared it to me for listening purposes anyway. And it's going to be, it's goddamn great. So shout out to Missing, played a lot of, you know, played St. Charbel's, played the Market, played the Pyramid Warehouse. I mean, all the friggin' venues that were legit in Fredericton at the time, which was any of the venues because it was such a fucking hard up scene. So there, Dan, thanks for letting me shoehorn three. Anybody else you want to shout out here before we wind her down, pal? Anything else before we kind of end the recording, or?
Well, I guess one more sibling band I can think of. A bit of an echo there. I was going to, yeah, I've been I've really been enjoying everything I've been hearing coming up from the new album by Speed that's coming out soon, featuring brothers Jam and Aaron Seow on vocals and bass respectively. As a band that just happens to have siblings in it. I know they kind of became a pardon.
Is that what they're called? Speed, like going quickly.
Yes, speed. Yes, as in yes, and I've mentioned them before. They kind of went viral again recently because, Jem, their vocalist, his day job is for the past 14 years has been music teacher, and he's also a classical flautist. So they wrote a song where at the end he could do just like a little flute part, and put that was one of the songs they released sort of in anticipation of the new album.
Thousand on it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, just sort of at the very end of the song, there's just like a little over top of like, a breakdown.
This is the new thing they got to try.
Exactly. Yeah. But and they're definitely a band that gets sort of lumped in on those, like, if you like Turnstile, you will like kind of lists. And, more power to them.
For sure.
Yeah, they've got an album coming out, I guess it'll be next week, called Only One Mode. Next week as of when we record this. And, awesome. Everything I've heard off of it so far has been enjoyable. Like, it's that, just like, It's the young people music. It's funny. My girlfriend's niece is who's like in her 20s, is a fan of theirs. Would like send her videos from shows. Like, I'm at this show, and then Jen will show me the videos. Like, hey, do you know this band? I'm like, oh yeah, that's that's Speed, or that's whoever.
You're getting it straight from the youth.
Exactly. It's just kind of funny.
Straight from
it's
the cell phone kind of
that,
youth.
That happened a couple of times. Another band that happens to have siblings in it that I've been enjoying lately. I guess not to drag things on too long there, I'll leave it here. But thanks again for another great show, Matt. For now,
that emphatically, because we're definitely going to revisit this. Because Dan has said, we haven't even really busted out of the alternative kind of genre here even a bit. So I think if we include significant rap artists and, metal and every other goddamn thing that we like, I think we've got at least one more episode, probably more. So I'm leaving it to the direction of the directing talents to sort of prosecute that.
I'll put it in the amorphous.
Generously told me what our next episode that we're going to record.
Yes. The next episode, just as a preview, will be our Summer Jams episode. So, for now, on that little teaser, I will say thanks again and see you around.
Thanks, everybody, for checking it out for any reason whatsoever, even if you hate the thing. We appreciate you, and we look forward to next time. Take care, everybody. Bye for now.